and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fabulous film, Boys vs. Girls. We have the lead actress, Rachel Desnez, Mike Sasko here. I hope I got them right. Well, close enough. Okay, well, both welcome to the show. Let's discuss your film. So right. We start off right at the beginning. I have to be shocked. I heard music I knew right off the top. So let's discuss, how did you get the rights to this song? Like, I remember bopping out to this song.
Yeah, it was when we were editing, you kind of put in some placeholders of, you know, songs you'd hope you'd like, but then you also realize within your budget constraints, you're not going to get all those songs. So the song that you're talking about is from a band called CanCon. A Toronto band back in the day, and they had a couple big hits at the time.
It
kind of does, if you're going to spend money on some songs, I mean, having that opening animation credit to a song that's a bit recognizable is a good place to put it. And you see our other big spend was the Pat Benatar at the very end of the thing for the credit. So if you kind of bookend the film with your money production value, it kind of tricks the audience into raising the production value, I guess. So, yeah.
Well, I have to agree with you. I mean, and even the animation at the front, I want to discuss. Who did your animation? Because it looks good.
It was an animator called Logan Wood, and he was a student of mine, a fourth-year student doing an internship. And in second-year film class, he did a little animation thing for a film project, and I really liked his style of, like, it was the old 2D style where the people's faces almost jiggle a bit because you're hand drawing it and you're getting exaggerated features and kind of comical stuff. So put that in the back of my head. So when it came time for this, and you might remember, as I do, in the 80s and 90s, you'd have these like opening animation things for these types of movies. So we were really trying to play into the hand of that nostalgia. So I contacted him and he was game for it. And yeah, he took the reins on that, and that was all him, that whole opening sequence.
Rachel, I don't want to leave you out here. So was this your first summer camp experience, or have you been to summer camp before?
I did do a summer camp once back when I was, I was in the sixth grade, so maybe around 12, I think I was. It was a cop camp. It was a pretty similar camp. It was in Windsor as well. And it was only for a week. But yeah, it was about the same thing. It was co-ed, so there was a lot of boys versus girls kind of activity going on. But yeah, that was kind of my only thing. I never really did any yearly summer camp kind of things.
So did that prep you for your role then? I mean, I know it's 7 years later, you're filming the movie. Did you have memories of that? Does that help you get into character? Or you just said, nope, I'm 12 then. I'm 19 now. I don't need that anymore.
In a way it did. It was seeing the camp before we started filming. It was like, whoa, this is a complete throwback. This is awesome. So I felt very comfortable kind of going into it being like, oh, I remember doing this before. Like, it makes sense. But in terms of getting into character, I really just went for it, right? Just like did it my own, kind of made my own thing with it. And I don't even know. I guess it was such a long time ago that it was, I couldn't really put much of my experience from the other camp into this character.
So, Mike, you must have been to summer camp or seen enough 80s summer camp movies to get your experience. So what are you basing your film while you're writing it on?
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to go to a lot of summer camps growing up. And this was kind of based on a little bit of reality. One of the camps I went to, Camp Kitchikawana, did indeed go co-ed for the first time in 1990. And I was like 10 years old at the time, so I kind of had a different look at it. But in real life, what happened was after a couple of days, everyone got along because the hormones kicked in and everything was wonderful. but I thought, you know, for a summer camp, I wanted it to be a bit more of a hangout movie of just like fun times and pranks and stuff. But you do need some sort of plot line so that the audience wants to pay attention and find out what happens. So kind of making it a Battle of the Sexes thing, which was a thing back in like the 80s. Like that was a movie, Battle of the Sexes kind of thing. where like now it's not really in vogue with culture, but I was definitely trying to throw back to that kind of thing.
Do you get people that come up to you that have seen the film, maybe Rachel, you too, that go, hey, I remember these films from the 80s. Thank you for bringing that back to me. Rachel, this is probably all new stuff to you because you're probably a little young to have seen them. Or did you watch things like Meatballs for it?
Oh, I definitely did do a little bit of research for this movie. There were some jokes that I didn't quite get right away, so I had to look it up first. But actually, when the movie came out, I was getting a ton of messages online from people being like, this was such a cool throwback. Like, I remember doing these things, or I remember, you know, saying these kind of things, and it was really cool to see that. So it was nice seeing people be like, that was awesome. I remember this. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, the people who get it and are old enough to get it or like those kind of things really dig it. I find it hits hard with them on the nostalgic factor. I mean, but there is some people who either didn't have a camp experience or didn't like this kind of film or are too young to know about this subgenre. And sometimes it flies over their head and that's fine too kind of thing. But it's kind of, yeah, I've had some people who like totally didn't realize this was a subgenre and then they might criticize it. I'm like, okay, but it was a thing and there are movies like this and it's okay to have different opinions. So, but no, those who are kind of into it, the Wet Hot American Summer or the Meatballs or even to a bigger extent, like the Porky's kind of thing, they kind of get the references I was doing.
Yeah, you've done it all. Now, you did bring on two people I do recognize very quickly, Kevin MacDonald and Colin Mochrie. Did you also use that as bookends so you have the viewer has people they would recognize or they just wanted to sign on?
Yeah, kind of with the producer's hat on. I mean, and I've made, this is my fifth feature film that I've kind of worked on and made. You find more and more like having any kind of noticeable, recognizable actors is a huge thing for film festivals, for distribution, all that kind of stuff. And even when you're with a small enough budget, I mean, people like Rachel, the up and coming Canadian actors that I had, I could afford them for the whole, you know, 15, 16 day shoot. But for Colin and Kevin, I could afford them for 3 days. So you write those characters in mind so that they were only each there for 3 days, but they appear throughout the whole film. So you watch the film and you're like, oh yeah, Colin and Kevin star in it and they're in it throughout it. But you, producer wise, you kind of compact their scenes to 3 12-hour days. And you kind of move the crew and the locations around based on them. So yeah, that was definitely a conscious thing and very much a producer's kind of decision.
So Rachel, how was this stepping in front of a Kevin MacDonald or a Colin Mochrie? I mean, two titans of Canadian comedy as far as I'm concerned.
It was really great. It's one of those things where it's like, you realize that they're just like people too, right? So you hype yourself up. You're like, oh my God, I'll be working with these big names, like these cool people. I watch Kevin all the time. For me, it was That 70s Show. I loved Kevin on That 70s Show. And Colin was, Whose Line Is It? Was just all the time was our go-to thing to watch back home. So when I found out that I was working with them, I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? But Mike did a really good job just being like, it's okay. Like we're all actors here. So working with them, it was cool. They're very down to earth, such nice people, so easy to talk to and work with that. It was just nice. It was everyone just there for the same reasons, have fun, make a good movie. So it was nice.
Okay, Mike, back to you. When you're setting up your cast, did you know ahead of time who you were getting, or is this an open casting call?
The only, we started with Colin and then like Kevin back to back kind of thing. So that was early on in the process. Like we shot June, July, and I casted them in March. Because again, it's an order of operations from the producing side of thing. Getting them triggers maybe more funding coming in, helps you get better casting directors, helps you get more interest, that kind of stuff. So order of operations was to get those two, you know, stars on board. And I was very lucky. They were my first two offers and they were both yeses within 24, 48 hours.
Oh, wow. That's
once
great.
I had them on board, I was then able to approach, Lewis and Kay cast and Sarah, Jenny Lewis and Sarah Kay out of Toronto, which are big casting agents out of there. And now you can kind of go to them and say, look, we're in any film, we're poor and all that, but I do have interest from these two known actors. Can you help me fill out the rest of the roles? Because all the eight main leads were co-counselors, were all supposed to be in their young 20s. And thankfully, they took pity on me and came on board. And they did a fantastic job organizing. I did auditions in Windsor with Fusion Talent Agency, Sarah there. So we first checked out all the Windsor talent that we had, because obviously from an economic point, if we have talent down here, especially a lot of the background performers, that's great. We can fill that in. But then we had to go to Toronto to kind of fill out the rest of the cast. And yeah, Sarah Kay and Jenny Lewis did a great job for us. And I probably saw 30 to 40 people for each of those eight lead roles.
Wow.
And I'd say I was really happy with at least three different people for each of those roles. So, but then luckily when I narrowed it down to who I wanted for each one, I got yeses from all of them as well. So fortunate. Yep.
Rachel, I hate to sing you out here, but I'm going to have to ask, how much fun is it working with Ben, the character Ben? I know his last name's Camacho. I can't remember his first name.
Oh, actually, I love that you asked that. Jesse, his name's Jesse. We have become absolute best friends since we shot this movie. We actually hang out. He's part of my small bubble, actually, during all of the pandemic. So I see him quite often. He is the coolest guy you could ever work with, as a person and as an actor. He makes really great choices. His improv is just always on point. Some of the things he said on, like, while we were filming, we couldn't keep a straight face, honestly. He'll give us like a, hey, just so to let you know, I'm going to do a little improv. Please don't laugh. And then he'll say his line, add some awful joke in it, and it's, everyone just dies every time. But yeah, as a person, he's absolutely amazing. Yeah.
Well, sorry, he was my favorite. Yeah,
I'll just add to that real quick, because he was one of the best actors to direct, for sure. So professional. He came in with, out of the co-leads too, he had probably some of the most experience going in as far as credits. And he would do things so professional, in the sense that I would shoot a lot in separation, where it's, okay, now you're talking, and you give people breaks and stuff. He would stay for every other person's takes on the set, even though the camera wasn't on him, just so that they can have reactions and eye lines and stuff. And I'd be like, hey man, go take a break. You've been working hard all day. He's like, no, I want to be there for their eye line, and just kind of going above and beyond. And I think he was kind of, Rachel, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was kind of a leader amongst your cast group, of kind of getting you guys all together and doing that.
Yeah, no, Jesse was absolutely the go-to guy. He would be organizing all of the activities after set, or when we were done filming and stuff. And then even after filming was completely over, me and the rest of the cast kind of got together every once in a while, but it was definitely Jesse's doing. He would be the one, you know, texting everyone and helping them feel loved. And he's got, like you said, he's been acting since he was very young. Both of his parents are actors, so he definitely knows what he's doing. He's been in the industry for a long time. So I look up to him. If I ever have questions about auditions now or roles, or even if I need help, you know, with an audition, I go to him every time. Yeah.
Let's stay with you for a second, since you keep bringing up auditions. Do you get nervous during auditions?
I used to get quite nervous. I think that a little bit of nerve is good. It means that you care and that you want the role. But I, throughout the years, have kind of been able to just kind of take it as I go and just be like, this is, if I like it, if I get it, that's awesome. And definitely calm down a lot more. When I was younger, though, when I started acting, it was hard. It was extremely nerve-wracking. You'd be typically just some young kid in a room with like a panel of people, and they'll be like, okay, go. And you're like, okay. But now you kind of get to know people as you do it. You'll go into casting rooms and you'll know everyone that's in there. So it's like, hey again, this is what I'm auditioning for. And they'll be like, all right, let's go. And then it's easy that way. So it gets easier if anyone wants to start being an actor and that's what they're scared of. You can get through it.
Okay, Mike, I want to go back to you. When you're shooting, were you using a two-shot camera or one shot? Were you using one camera?
I was just using one single camera the whole time. And in fact, for economic reasons of like efficiency, I shot with just three lenses. So we had three okay. prime lenses, a 28, a 50, and an 85. So everything was heavily storyboarded and shot listed beforehand. But by having just the three lenses, I could group shots together and just kind of have it really efficient, have the camera crew set to go.
Now, how do you feel about when the actors are ad-libbing your script? I mean, you've lived, breathed, written it. Do you keep the ad-libs? You're like, okay, that's great, guys, but I want it this way.
I don't mind. I usually, and no one really argued or pushed on this point, let's just first do it the way that I wrote it and the way that it is. And then once we have that take in the can, so to speak, then you can improv after that. And almost everyone bought into that right away. Especially Colin and Kevin, like master improvers. So of course I want them to throw in whatever they can. And they were very efficient. They would get the take how I wanted it in the first or second take. So then we could do some fun improv ones. But even as Rachel mentioned, like Jesse did some amazing improv, a lot of it that some of it made the final cut, but he would always give me my takes first so that we had it. And then depending on time, he could go and improv a few. So, yeah.
So Rachel, back to you. You would get to participate in numerous camp rituals, Tomahawk, dancing around the fire, which you didn't get to do, British Bulldog, you didn't get to do, and the morning dip, you didn't get to do. So did you want to engage in any of those, or did you engage in any of those later that we didn't see?
As a character or as a person offset?
Offset. Let's talk about it.
It was definitely a party all the time on the set. A lot of the people involved in the creation, like Cass, were from the university, learning from Mike himself and getting that extra credit for school. So it was a lot of people that I grew up with, that I knew. So there's definitely some pool parties, some fires after the takes were over and stuff. I definitely have a lot of great memories. I talked to Jesse last night. And he wanted me to tell you guys that it was just a rager all the time. But in reality, no, everyone was good. Everyone was smart about it, but it was fun. Yeah, we had some good nights.
So, Mike, how do your nights go on this? I mean, you're busy. You're an indie production. You have one camera. You probably don't have a large crew. What are you doing at night? Are you doing dailies or trying to get things set up for the next day?
Getting things set up for the next day. So my routine, I didn't stay. A lot of the actors and crew lived on set. So they stayed at the cabins, which was efficient and stuff. And as Rachel mentioned, they would hang out afterwards and stuff. But at the end of each, 12, 14 hour day, I would drive back to my house, see my wife and dogs and prep for the next day. I mean, I had the whole shoot prepped well before we went into production, but still every weekend you're meeting with your department heads to go over what you're doing that week, major scenes as far as production design, camera. You're going over with your ADs the night before each day, all the shots that you have to do, order of operations kind of stuff. So yeah, the 3.5 weeks that we shot, you're working after hours as well and you're coming in early again. So
just wondering. How was getting this hairstyle right? Because, I mean, definitely the clothes look 90s to me. Rachel's never had her hair like this in her life, so this is all different for her. How does that feel for you, Mike, to get that prepped? And, Rachel, same question for you. How does it feel to dress like it's Halloween?
Yeah, it was tough because it's 1989, 1990, so it's definitely a period piece, and people don't realize that 30 years ago, people looked different and dressed different and production design was very different. So I lived through it, but a lot of the crew were in their 20s and stuff, weren't around for that. So our production designer, Emily, who kind of led those departments, did a great job at researching all the hairstyles. And with each of the four, females and the four males, you kind of want them to each have that iconic thing. So one has this type of hair. So they're all kind of like represented or whatever. So I think we did a good job of kind of getting the two-dimensional iconic characters in there represented hair-wise. But some of those styles, they took a while. Like you try to plan your shoot so that people come to set, you know, in advance to get their hair done, and you time it. And usually the guys would take a little bit less time than the girls or whatever, so you'd shoot their shots first. But it was down to the wire sometime getting some of those haircuts. And then the toughest one, if you really look for it, it was tough to get when in those scenes where you'd have like 50 or 100 extras, you have them come in and it's really tough to process that many people to make them look that way. So in wide shots, if you look far enough, you could probably see some haircuts that might be more 2000s or whatever. But usually we try to get in the foreground, the featured background performers that we got to have time to at least add some steps into their hair or a bowl cut or something.
For my hairstyle, I think I got it pretty easy. It was just a ponytail most of the time. So that was super easy. It's what I usually do with my hair anyways. I think Sam had it the worst out of all of the hairstyles. She had her hair crimped every day.
Yes, that's the one I was going to ask about, the crimped one.
Yeah, so she definitely went through it. Her hair felt, you know, that it was in the 90s for sure. So watching her, I was like, oof, I'm glad I just got to have a ponytail. I used to crimp my hair when I was younger, just not my whole head like that.
Oh, that was a definite.
Yeah. Yeah. And as for style, I actually just dress like that normally. So I loved it. I thought it was fun. It's one of those things that style that's kind of coming back. So for me, it was fun. I loved wearing everything I was wearing. I kept some of the pieces, that I still wear. So I loved it. I know that some people had it worse than me. Hip hop. If you, the guy who plays hip hop, Romeo, he had, I think, the best of all the styles. He had like the backwards t-shirts and, you know, all of that. He was funny, but yeah, other than that, for me, I loved it. I was there for it every day.
So Michael, how was writing a 90s goth girl? Like it brought me back to high school immensely.
Well, yeah, now there's varying degrees of like you can be goth, but you're not telegraphing it as much, or you can be emo or all these other things in between. But back then it was like if you jumped in the deep end, you were in the deep end. So you had to like wear it really proud or whatever. So you did the full, you know, white powder, black lipstick, that kind of stuff. You really, you know, did it loud kind of thing. So again, it was just, you're looking at four guy characters, four girl characters, and you kind of want to just do the iconic things that people can quickly represent. In comedies, having more two-dimensional shells is sometimes a good thing because you don't really have time nor do you want to spend time doing tons of character building, right? So that we understand our characters. It's more like, let's get to the jokes, right? So I wanted characters that you just quickly kind of, with a quick little flashback and a look and like a couple sentences, you're like, I know that person. I know that character. I knew them back then. And that was enough to then let's go into the jokes kind of thing. So yeah, the goth character was one of them that most of us met back then.
I do want to discuss your location a bit. I mean, how did you find your camp? Not every place has a camp. I wouldn't know where to find one.
Yeah, it was tough in the sense that you needed a camp that during the summer months was going to let you shoot there. And by default, most camps are busy during the summer because they have stuff going on. So we were able to find Kiwanis Sunshine Point Camp, which only operates in July and August. So we rented it for like end of May, all of June, and like I think the first week of July we had it. So it was nice that we didn't overlap with them, their operation. And it was also just in the process of kind of getting a facelift, which was also what we needed, was a camp that was more stuck in the 80s or 90s. Because if you go to a lot of camps now, I mean, there's LCD screens on the wall and stuff like that. So we cropped out a few little details. They had like a really modern looking playset that we had to kind of crop out in a few shots. But otherwise it was stuck in that moment. And even now, if you go back to it, they've done upgrades and renovations on stuff. So,
Did you shoot everything at the camp? I thought there might be a second location, like a school location.
Maybe. There were three. Yeah. So 95% of it was the camp. We also shot at Kingsville High School because there was a couple flashbacks to a school scene, yeah. High school scene. We also shot at the University of Windsor because there was Rachel and Dale's character, Amber and Dale, had a few university things. And then there was like a house party nearby we shot at. But that was a lifesaver as far as if you're a young writer or a new writer and you're trying to get an indie film made, if you can get 90% of it to take place at one major location, you're helping your producer and you're helping your budget out quite a bit.
I also want to ask, where did you find a ghetto blaster and a tape deck? I haven't seen one in a Goodwill in 20 years.
Yeah, because when people get them, they hang on to them. No, this was our production designer, Emily, just did a fantastic job. I mean, she had a little bit of a budget, but it was peanuts. And it was, when I hired her on, I mean, even during the interview, I was like, you're going to have to hustle with little bits of money. And she's like, no, all my best friends are at Value Village. I'm going to run around. And she spent weeks or months kind of doing the pre-production, going around, finding all these things, saving us lots of money, which was like not even an option. We didn't have a lot of money to spend. But she nailed so much of it.
So Rachel, when you do these skits, does it bring back any memories for you? I mean, or no, the skits were like, nope, I've never done this kind of stuff before. Cause I mean, we all do it in improv, I guess, during acting class.
I didn't do much improv for my character. She was much more of like, calm and, you know, a lot less character, you know, building on Amber. But yeah, obviously I took a few classes that definitely reminded me of some of the things we did. It was more so keeping a straight face during other people's improv that, you know, was quite the throwback for me. It was just fun to watch everyone else and still stay in character and stuff. That's what I noticed the most.
This is one thing I've noticed from the film. Does anybody ever come to camp with no clothes in anybody's experience? Well, you have a character that gets off the bus and has no clothes. This made me laugh so hard.
That was kind of based on myself a little bit, because the joke was, you'd go to camp with a big duffel bag and your mom would pack you 14 pairs of underwear,
shirts,
all that. And then you would just, if you were 10, you would just wear the same thing the whole time. And then when you'd come home, all the stuff still folded with a wet bathing suit on the top of it. And that was that. So, I mean, I went through that, but I think a lot of other people who went to camp kind of can attest to that too, that you would just kind of wear the same thing the whole time and kind of just be stinky at the end of it.
I do want to discuss one last thing. Colin Mockery is wearing a certain kind of logo shirt. How many of those were made?
I'm sure they had at least two of them, but him and Kevin's character, I think we put them in the same kind of outfit the whole time, as if they had their own little uniform kind of thing or whatever, so that we didn't have to change them as much. The counselors, we had to change around a little bit more because they took place, you know, they didn't have like a uniform they had to wear, but I think there might just be two of each of those for Colin.
And I guess I have to ask, the t-shirts, how many of those were made? It looks like there's tons of t-shirts, maybe about 30. I tried to count them.
Yeah, for the very end scene, it was like they were trying to get their act together and they spent a little money to put those t-shirts together. So I think they might have made about 50 of those white t-shirts that had the logo on it. I would say about 50.
Now,
it's
Rachel,
funny you say that. Oh, sorry.
No,
I never got a t-shirt and I always wanted one because everyone was walking around with them and
there
I never
go. That was
got
a t-shirt.
I didn't get one of those. We had cast and crew. I think we had crew t-shirts. I don't know if you got one of those, Rachel.
I didn't. I got my colorful bathing suit, which
and
I
then
really
we had.
Like.
We just had Indiegogo backer t-shirts that were different. But yeah, I didn't get one of the camp ones either. I should. I imagine Emily's hoarding them. She's going
to. I'll have to talk to her about that. Yeah.
Okay. Before we get to my final questions, I do want to ask, how was the Indiegogo campaign for you? Did you enjoy that process, Michael?
It was all right. I hadn't done it on any of my other films beforehand, the four features I'd done before. And I half did it on this one because when I had a lot of students on board and I was teaching them a producing class, and I wanted to show them all the different ways you can finance something. So you do tax credit, you do, you know, telefilm, you can do pre-sales, private equity investment. There's all these different ways you pull money together. And I had never done the Kickstarter Indiegogo. So I decided I'd turn that into part of the class and they would like create stuff and make stuff. So I don't know if you saw the video that we did for that. So
I did.
It was kind of more of a learning experience. I think I would know how to do it a lot better now and what things worked and stuff. And, you know, there was some engagement and people did enjoy that, but there's definitely a different art form to doing a successful campaign for Indiegogo and stuff. And I think if I did it again, I have learned a lot that I would do better.
Great. Okay. Your fun questions. Because your first time on the show, I ask everybody the same question. Your favorite film, please.
My favorite film? I'm a big Jurassic Park fan, actually. I love Jurassic Park. It's got everything I need in it. It's got, you know, it's funny, but it's also like kind of action. It's dark, but it's also, it's not. So that's mine. And honestly, the animation and the CGI on it for the time period it was made in is quality. It doesn't get old for me.
Great choice.
Thanks.
My favorite film is 2001, A Space Odyssey. But I'd be remiss not to mention that my favorite TV show is Twin Peaks. So there you go.
Oh, that makes total sense, actually. They kind of go hand in hand. Yeah. Question two, your favorite on-set meal?
Favorite on-set meal? That's a good question. Set meal. I was really picky at the time that we were filming this, actually. Oh. I was a hard vegan, so I didn't eat a lot of the food. But at one point, my good friend of mine from Wolfhead Distillery, they brought a big meal just with a good variety of stuff. I remember really enjoying that. And then one night, actually, when we were all hanging out outside after filming, I made a really, really, really good tortilla, just like grilled cheese, kind of vegan cheese tortilla on my own that I loved. But that's it.
I had, catering from, Wolfhead gave us some food and coulinis as well, but we had a local company, Frenchie's, which is a poutinery, a couple times dropped off some trays for us of just gluttonous poutine. And I was a vegetarian as well, and I still am. And they made like a vegetarian poutine with like vegetarian gravy and all that. And it was pretty delicious.
I actually don't remember that. Wow. Where was I?
Your vegan food.
Really.
Okay, the last question may be a little bit harder. What horror film does the camp most remind you of?
What horror film does camp most remind you of?
This camp that you filmed in most remind you of. Mine would be Sleepover Camp.
Oh.
Sleepaway Camp totally looks like a sleepaway camp. The kitchen looked right. The characters kind of looked white. I can see them, you just sleeping in the sleepaway, you know, over camp.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, it's not really a horror one, but I kind of is in that realm as the Addams Family 2.
Yeah.
I guess that's the ties into the comedy, that we're a comedy or whatever.
Yeah. I'm totally
like
good
the idea in that film. I mean, because there's a bit of horror in it, but it's like comedy horror.
Oh yeah, it's comedy horror.
But
yeah,
it was just so great, and I guess because we have the goth character too. Actually, yeah. when the actress who plays Dani, Michaela, when she showed up to her audition, she wore a Wednesday Addams, and she was dressed as full goth, so she was committed. So there's the tie-in right there.
Rachel, that might be too hard a question for you.
I don't know if you can see. I'm really, really thinking about it. I'm a baby. I don't watch much scary movies. I'd rather act in one than watch it. But, I don't know. The first thing I thought was scary movie, and I was like, that's not a scary movie. It's a comedy.
Before I let you go, because we're running out of time. Michael, where can they find your film? Or Rachel, you can tell me where to find the film if you know.
Would you like to go, Mike?
Sure. It's in Canada and the U.S. So through in Canada, it's Mongrel Media, and they have it all over the place. So anywhere you can rent or buy movies, iTunes and Amazon Prime Video and all that stuff. But if you go to boysvgirlsmovie.ca, all the links are in there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you both for your time and have a great evening.
You as well. Thank you.